lot of those institutions came to Switzerland because they knew that the government is not in full control. So they had, even those guys had more privacy, of course. And I think that's why also the United Nations came to Switzerland. That's why it established BITS, the Bank of International Settlement over here. But it was not driven by a Swiss initiative or that we were heavily profiting from that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you look at 99.9% of the politicians, guys who believe that they are so wise and so intelligent that they can tell hundreds of thousands of people what they have to do, what they have to eat, what they even are allowed to think. We were also witnessing over the last 20 years a campaign against Switzerland to avoid that people look into the positive aspects of Switzerland as a role model.
How do you legally move a few dollars or millions of dollars in the U.S. banking system without it being tracked back to you? I've been showing people how to get financial privacy, financial anonymity, in fact, for 25 years. I get people out of debt situations, even during the middle of a levy or lawsuit. Then I create a legal fortress around the cash flow and assets that cannot be broken, even by the IRS. For some professionals and small business owners, I even have to use the dark web to handle large transactions invisibly. If you're still the personal signer for any bank account or not using the dark web for business, you're a sitting duck. Visit me at aceofcoins.com to learn the secrets to total financial privacy.
I'm Sarah Westall. Today I have a really in-depth conversation into finance, geopolitics, what's going on with the economy, the world economy. And I have Claudio Grass joining the program. He is an ambassador for the Mises Institute, and he also is the president of Global Gold. And he consults people on what to do with precious metals, buying gold and silver, but is very astute at economics and understanding and helping to spread libertarian ideas about economics. And so we dive into a lot of those concepts. And, you know, the libertarian ideas was what the founding of our country was about and what they thought about economics. And it's all about freedom. Now, not everybody has a perfect idea of what means freedom. Not that he doesn't, but I'm just saying there's always debate on how you get there. But We start down some of those debates and talk about it because it's a complex topic. You have people trying to throw wrenches into all of this stuff. So we talk about cryptocurrencies, we talk about central banks, but we also talk about Switzerland, which is his home country, and it's the most decentralized managed country on the planet. And there's so much more freedom there, which is so amazing about Switzerland is they have more guns per capita than any place in the world and practically zero homicide rate. They're a perfect place to point to as far as how guns, having high rate of guns does not cause higher rates of homicide. It does not mean that. There's other factors that are causing that. So we talk about that a little bit too. We kind of dive into all sorts of things, but he talks about why Switzerland is how it is and how it's changing as some of the banking laws have changed and how there's all these globalist people being pulled. You know, they're trying to pull their politicians into that direction. But the people are resisting, which is a good thing. So we talk about that. And then he sticks around for my patrons to talk more about the gold and silver market because, you know, we talk a little bit about the gold and silver market that Russia and China are hoarding gold, but also JP Morgan is hoarding silver. And he talks about that, the facts behind that, and that it's true and where he sees all that going. And then, of course, we dive more into other geopolitical issues for my patrons. He is just amazing. So let's get into that interview now with Claudio Grass. Hi, Claudio. Welcome to the program.
Sarah, pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Well, you have come highly recommended. Like, I need to talk to Claudio about some of these economic issues and that you need to... You're the expert. And so I'm excited to talk to you because I do have a lot of questions. Geopolitically, you're over there in Switzerland, right?
Correct.
Which is kind of, besides the city of London, it's one of the centers of finance.
It used to be, yeah. I mean, we have a long tradition in Switzerland when it comes to banking, of course.
Yes, yes.
And I think one of the main arguments was always that we have been, you know, the history of Switzerland is we have always been a decentralized nation. So, you know, we don't have one president. We always had seven of these guys. And at the same time, you know, the states, they basically had much more power than the centralized government, and the municipalities even more power than the centralized or even the state. So we are based on the principles of subsidiarity, meaning everything is built up from the bottom-up approach and not from the top-down approach.
You know what's so interesting? I've done some research on Switzerland, and you have the best private schools. I know that, and the best, some of the best school systems, but the private schools, and I don't know about your public schools, and you can clue me in, but the private schools are like where everybody wants to send their kids. But you also have the highest gun ownership rate while also having no gun homicides.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, we have a militia system. I mean, we have a militia army. So I also used to be part of that militia system. So I'm even an officer of the Swiss army. So it's mandatory that when you're young, when you're 18, 19, that you basically have to serve at least, in the past, it used to be 17 weeks conscription service. And then basically had the possibility to become promoted to a sergeant. And then you had to do the whole stuff again and some additional education. So, but it was always, you know, militia and really there to protect the nation, to protect Switzerland and its border. If we ever would have, you know, a case like in the past where we would have to defend the liberty and the sovereignty of our own nation. I mean, Switzerland is famous for armed neutrality basically since the Westphalian War and then also the Congress of Vienna in 1848, where we basically were. All the big powers around us were saying, okay, Switzerland can be independent and sovereign and it's neutral and armed neutrality.
Well, it's so smart. You know, everybody always says, I'm Switzerland. Here you'll say, if you don't want to get in an argument, you're like, okay, I'm Switzerland. It's, everybody knows what that means. Yeah. But it's so smart because everyone who reads history and knows about what's really going on knows that both sides are, it's wars are just bogus. And staying independent is such a wise position to be able to take for a country. And it's amazing that your country is able to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, we have been heavily under pressure. And basically, when you came up with the first question that City of London and comparison Switzerland, that we have been dominating the financial center. I think the main difference, I mean, I know the story of City of London as an owned state within the state. And where you had the big bankers, part of the British Empire, of course. Switzerland, you know, the background why we had so many people coming to Switzerland and bringing their money over here was because we had, banking privacy, which has been basically, we came up with banking secrecy before the Second World War. So it was even before, some people are saying we brought it up because of the Nazis to protect the Jews. And so that's not the case. We already did it before that happens because the Swiss people thought, we don't want to have the government looking into everything. We have to protect the individual. We have to protect the citizen from an overwhelming government. And that's why we had so much privacy in the past. And that's why also because we have been a neutral nation, we were not taking part of, we joined the United Nations as in 2001. Around that. I mean, in the last 20 years, a lot of stuff changed within Switzerland. And at the same time, when you look at Switzerland, how it is positioned outside of our country, a lot of, the younger generations, they believe that we have been the guys making money during the Second World War, that we basically were profiting from war, and that we have been the hidden place because we also have the Bank of International Settlement, and we have the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, and so on. But I think that's, I did my research on history. I love history.
High quality turmeric improves focus and mood, helps increase energy, helps age-related memory decline, and much, much more. Science Natural is offering my listeners 3 free bottles with the purchase of 1 bottle. See link below for this great offer. Also, did you know that wild lettuce is similar to morphine and is the best natural painkiller known, but it does not contain any addictive opiates? Learn this and many other remedies in the Lost Ways, methods of our ancestors. See the link below.
So what I want basically to say is, Switzerland became a safe haven because of our neutrality and because we had a system of decentralization. And at the same time, you know, when you, all the surrounding powers basically have centralized nations, they were, you know, kingdoms before, then they turned into fascistic, national socialistic, you know, imperialistic, whatever, but always a top-down approach. And Switzerland basically is based on the spirit of Aristoteles, who once said, you know, demos, the village, kratia, the rulers. So democracy can work on a very low scale. And, you know, so that's why we always had this principle of subsidiarity, protecting the individual. And at the same time, the deal was also that the municipality is fully, you know, they are responsible for education. They were responsible for religious. For example, we had, even before we had the religious wars in Europe, we had in Switzerland already, we left it up to the municipality if they want to become Catholic or Protestant, for example. So they had a lot of freedom. And that was always based on the lowest level. So basically limiting the power of the politicians, but also limiting the power of the people, you know, that they cannot come up with demands, so that a guy in Geneva basically has to pay something because a few people in the rest of Switzerland decided that they would like to have a certain redistribution, which is democracy. You know, 51% basically are supporting something, and then the other 49% they have to pay for it.
Would you say that being one of the only real democracies in the world brings your people freedom and safety, right? You have all these guns and like no homicides, which is a great thing to point to for people who are anti-gun. And you pretty much police yourself. You have very low crime, you have all these things. However, because you are free and all these other countries around you are not, essentially, they use your banking system. They use everything. Like I had Birkenfeld on, who was one of the largest whistleblower in our country about UBS Bank.
Yeah.
And they're using Switzerland as a place to be able to funnel money through for human trafficking and all sorts of nefarious activities because you are free.
I mean, I think that's, I mean, one point definitely I would agree with you is that a lot of those institutions came to Switzerland because they knew that the government is not in full control. So they had, even those guys had more privacy, of course. And I think that's why also the United Nations came to Switzerland. That's why it established the BITS, the Bank of International Settlement over here. But it was not driven by a Swiss initiative or that we were heavily profiting from that kind of stuff.
But that's what I'm saying is that the problem of being the only true democracy, your own people are flourishing under it. It's just Absolutely. Because everybody around is not in a free environment. They move their stuff to Switzerland to try to take advantage of the nefarious activities. It's almost like you can clean out your own. Well, everybody has a percentage of bad characters, right? And you you police them yourself and you're going to have your own percentage. But all these other bad characters from all over the place end up going to your place because they don't have freedom where they're at and try to take advantage of you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in the past, it was pretty clear, you know, I mean, we had, if somebody showed up, you know, 20 years ago or even longer and dropped some money. And, so the Swiss banker had to decide, okay, where does he come from? You know, who is he? How he made his money? And then basically he had to judge, do we want to accept him as a client? And, so, you know, even, I mean, not all, every crook had a bank account in Switzerland. I think that really came also with, you know, look at UBS or Birkenfeld, for example, or Credit Suisse. I mean, UBS is not a Swiss bank any longer. They employ more people in the United States for more than a decade already. When UBS basically got together with, was it Warburg? You know, they became a primary dealer from the Federal Reserve. The same goes for Credit Suisse. When they purchased First Boston, you know, it became a primary dealer status from the Federal Reserve. And Look at these guys. You know, we had an American ruling over UBS, and we had a German guy before. And now today we have Credit Suisse has a guy from the Ivory Coast used to work for the World Bank. I mean, so, you know, even these banking standards, I mean, I know a lot of old private bankers, and they are good Swiss people. I mean, it's not up to the Swiss to decide if somebody had paid, you know, for the taxes, for example. I mean, in a way, you could also look, I mean, today it's not possible any longer. I mean, the banks basically became the agents of the governments. And today everyone is basically a criminal that has something. And, you know, if they have an offshore account, whatever, then, you know, within, because of FATCA and all that stuff, basically a lot of people believe that they do something wrong, that it's criminal to have an offshore account, that they have to hide something. And this is complete nonsense, of course. But in the past, it was possible to come over and say, listen, I'm an entrepreneur. I made some money. My government, we were not obliged to check if they paid their taxes. We were obliged to find out if they faked some documents they basically showed. That was criminal under Swiss law, but we were not playing the police. And at the same time, I truly believe taxation is theft. So we were a last bastion within Switzerland. And because we had, we were holding up competition at the end of the day. We had, because if Germany just wanted to raise more, tax their people more and more, then there were some possibilities. I mean, today, if you want to really hide money somewhere, or you want to traffic, when you want, laundering money and all that stuff. I mean, first of all, you can go through Delaware, you go to the States, and then you can do it, with HSBC is very famous, for money laundering. So the big banks, I mean, it's still there, But Switzerland, basically, the whole banking secrecy and the financial place of Switzerland really over the last 10 years, has came down tremendously. Now every banks, they all are compliant. They have to follow the rules. Of course, as I said, if you're a criminal and you're a crook, I mean, then you definitely go through the big banks because they still accept, the money. But you can go through Hong Kong and United States and whatever.
Well, let's face it though, who wants to be a conduit for human trafficking? So I would think when you know that that's the kind of stuff they were using your banks for, you would want to, I want freedom for my people and we got to figure it, but we can't allow human trafficking to be done through our banks.
I mean, definitely. I mean, this is, as I said, the old Swiss bankers I know, they always knew what is right and what is wrong. And, but also Switzerland became an international banking place and you had, JP Morgan moving in, and Chase, and all those different, and as I said, UBS, I mean, Credit Suisse, they employ more people outside of Switzerland. And so it's an international, banks, basically, it started in the 80s and then basically it was driven forward. And, around in the 90s with all the takeovers, I mean, it really became multinational. And then you also saw, beginning of the 90s that Americans were taking over. You had other people coming in to the financial place of Switzerland. And they, of course, I think they also abused the freedom they had because that's always the case. If you have freedom, you can also abuse it. But so it's at the end of the day, it's really, the standards the people decide.
Well, let's use an example. If you make guns illegal, then that's where the most violence occurs. If guns are completely legal and everybody has them, that's where the least violence occurs. That's what all the stats show. Switzerland's a perfect example of that. Another example is when drinking. And I know everybody hates the fact that you have to look at this stuff, but when kids can't drink, and I don't let my kids drink, but because it's just the culture is so bad. But when kids can't drink and it's always, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, they want to do it more. But if it's just no big deal, then they don't really do it. You don't have that abuse problem. And I think that's what we're seeing. When you don't have freedom, you're going to fight back. But when you get the freedom and it's part, then you become more responsible.
I mean, when it comes to guns, then I'm definitely one of the guys saying, a bad guy will always, they don't care if there's a gun free zone or whatever. I mean, they will always organize their guns. So,
going to check the law before they decide whether they're going to carry a gun in there.
Not at all. I mean, they are happy. When you look at the shootings which took place in the United States, a lot of them took place in gun-free zones. So that means, the criminals, they give a shit. And they walk in, they know for sure that no one can defend themselves. So they have an easy solution. So, I mean, but the guns is, that's also, we have in Switzerland, because when you go to the army, you take back your rifle, your assault rifle, and you have it at home. So we hardly have any incidents with it. But I think that just shows that, our society is still more sound than, for example, what's happening in the United States in certain areas. Or when you look into other countries, gun violence has a lot of things to do with just the culture, with the people themselves. And so when you come to Switzerland, everything, you know, it's still organized, everything is nice, people feel comfortable. We never had, you know, those big clashes like you have right now in the States when you look at this identity politics, this divide and conquer strategy. And of course, because Switzerland was a nation consisting of 26 states with four different languages already, so we never intermingled in the affairs of, you know, the guys. I'm living in central Switzerland. I live in the canton of Zug. So in the past, you know, the canton was completely self-independent. And before 1848, we were only obliged to help each other if we are attacked from the outside. But all the rest basically was remaining with the municipalities and the states. So that's why we had different cultures. Because the guys in central Switzerland never had an impact to wish for something that the guys in the East had to pay for because it was politically not allowed. So that basically brought the whole nation together, defined by its own will. And it was not imposed on us from the top that, you know, the central government was saying, now you have to do this and you have to do that. And that's one solution fits it all. So we never had that basically in the past.
Well, we have a melting pot of immigrants. We also have a drug problem that was purposely created in a lot of ways. We have a slavery history that was fueled and wasn't taken care of properly. And then we have human and sexual trafficking that is every city in our country has some police, you know, every police force in our country has some part that's compromised. And that's hitting all of our schools. So we have all these bad elements coming together that's affecting our society.
You know, I mean, Switzerland also, I mean, we have 25 foreigners. 25% of all the inhabitants of Switzerland are foreigners. And we had always in the past, you know, roughly 15 to 20%. So we are we are a melting pot. And then we have Italian-speaking part, we have a French-speaking part, we have a German-speaking part, and we have a Romanche-speaking part. So it's also kind of melting pot. But, you know, when we go back into history and we look at the old philosophers of Switzerland, they were always saying, what does a true Swiss qualify? A true Swiss qualifies an individual that believes in freedom, in, you know, that he wants to achieve a better life, but he wants to produce, he's self-responsible. So that's basically the people we attracted. You know, I mean, it even started, you know, the guys who started our watch manufacturing business used to be the Huguenots, which have been prosecuted in France by the Catholics. So they fled to Switzerland and they started the manufacturing business when it comes to the watch industry. Then we had other guys from Germany, also Protestants fleeing from the Catholics, and they started, you know, the industrial revolution. So because Switzerland, even before 1848, so I mean, Switzerland used to be the highest industrialized nation on the continent of Europe after the British Empire, before 1848, because we had so much freedom and we never had a centralized government. So we had more competition popping up and we had people from abroad coming into Switzerland, you know, because of more freedom, more liberty, less taxation and all that kind of stuff. And that basically is the history a bit of Switzerland. I mean, the problem today, I mean, I lived 2 years in the Middle East. You know, when I was young, I also made my mistakes. So I used to work for the United Nations as a Swiss delegate. And so I was also living in Damascus in Syria. And I had, you know, my discussions with my young fellows down there. And they basically always told me, yeah, you know, if we would make it to Europe, then we also get the house, and we get the car, and the government looks after us. So it's the promised land. And so I think, yeah, the welfare state, together with mass immigration, I mean, it's not that people become because of freedom and liberty. The people are coming mainly to integrate into a higher welfare system with a higher class of standard of living. And then, of course, some of them are not used to the whole industry and the economical system we have in the Western world. So that, I mean, that's today the main problem. And I think that will remain.
So do you feel that you're losing your freedoms there? Like, is the cultural attitudes changing? Because Switzerland is such a beacon of hope for freedom. I mean, it really is quite a bit different than the United States is right now. And I love the fact that there's no homicides, but the gun rate's the highest in the world. I mean, it just proves the fact that that's a reality. But you were saying the reason it's like that is because people take responsibility for their own lives then, and it becomes a different culture. Do you think you're losing that?
It basically, it came down over the last, especially the last 20 years. I mean, also Switzerland was the last nation on the gold standard, for example. You know, we had in our constitution, we basically had up to the year of 2000, we had 40% of the money in circulation needs to be backed by physical gold. And that has been changed in 2000. And then we became a member of United Nations. And, you know, and then, of course, the central bank was able to print more money. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the system we are in, it's a credit-based system. You know, the more credit you get, or the more credit worthy you are, the richer you are at the end of the day. That's where we are. And so it's corrupting, you know, it's corrupting society. And it also has an impact here in Switzerland. And when it comes to the politicians and the bureaucrats, they are all the same. You know? They are not different. I mean, I know three guys which make a difference when I look at politicians. One is Ron Paul. The other one is Václav Klaus, he used to be the president of the Czechoslovakia. And the third one is Gottfried Blum in the UK. So they basically entered politics because they wanted to reduce the power of the state. They wanted to basically to support the individual liberty and to protect individual liberty. But, you know, when you look at 99.9% of the politicians, guys who believe that they are so wise and so intelligent that they can tell hundred thousands of people what they have to do, what they have to eat, what they even are allowed to think. For me, that sounds pretty neurotic, would be, you know, the wrong. I mean, I always call it sociopathic. So politicians in a centralized system, you know, they all want the same. They want to live off tax money, and the bureaucrats, of course, they living, you know, they are, that's a deep state also in the United States. You know, it's not the politicians. Some of them are staying there for a long time. You have a kind of aristocracy over there. But at the end of the day, the true guys, you know, the guys who are staying in power and working for the government for 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, that's everywhere. You know, they're all the same. They truly believe that they have to tell the people what to do because they're all too stupid. And so Switzerland never had that kind of structure. And even now you see that the Swiss people, you know, we control our borders. So we are not part of the European Union. And the Swiss people, 84% of the Swiss, they don't want to join the European Union. So the resistance is there. The politicians, they want to drive us further. So it's a constant clash over the last decades. And I think, you know, what happened in 2008, 2009, when the Swiss gave away the banking secrecy, I think that was a big mistake. And so that did a harm to Switzerland as a safe haven. And in combination with all the bad stories we hear about Switzerland, that we are the drug and money laundering and trafficking, child trafficking, whatever, I think that's a lot of that is bullshit. But what these people want to make sure is that, you know, when you look around you, people should not look at Switzerland as a potential model for the future, because Switzerland is all about decentralization. And the globalists and all these guys, they want to have centralization. And they want to empower themselves and, you know, globalize everything, put it on the one roof, the so-called New World Order, which you know, Bush and all these guys basically promoting for a long time. And so Switzerland has been always a bastion, and that's why we were also witnessing over the last 20 years a campaign against Switzerland to avoid that people look into the positive aspects of Switzerland as a role model.